highly sensitive children are the alarm bells of society. They're telling us, hey, this isn't working for a lot of us. And I'm here on this earth to scream at you about it. Children learn through play. Play is their language. Toys are their words. You know, as adults, we need to learn to speak that language. If it's uncomfortable for us, that's where we start. I teach the science of play to parents. I was trained. I was not naturally playful. I learned this. If I can do it, you can do it too.
Neuroscience, it's very apart from society itself, from parents. And we do need that information as well.
The old way focused on an ineffective assumption of the brain. We were comparing people to dogs. Like parents, we have the privilege to always focus on our legacy and learn more and do better than our parents because our parents knew what they knew and they were doing the best they can. And we know more and can do the best that we can.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're not stuck. We can get out of fixed mode and go into a growth mindset and we can just, you know, change. And that it's that's the hope for the future human being.
Hello and welcome to How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. I'm your host, Megan Thompson, licensed clinical professional counselor and registered play therapist supervisor. We at MTC teach parents how to eliminate the daily meltdown and shutdown cycle for your sensitive children and teens. Highly sensitive children make up 15 to 20% of the population, according to research that has been gathered for over a century. And this podcast answers one question: how can you raise emotionally intelligent children, stop walking on eggshells, and help your child express their needs safely without punishments, yelling, or coddling? If you want to know the answer, you're in the right place.
Hi, Megan. Welcome. Hello. Thank you for being here with me today.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So wonderful. So I would like to start by asking you if you can tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a coach for parents of highly sensitive children.
Sure. So I am a licensed clinical professional counselor here in the United States, outside of Washington, D.C. in Maryland. And I'm also a registered play therapist supervisor. So I'm a trained mental health clinician, play therapist for young children. However, I am only now a parent coach consultant and have been for many years at this point. And I came to work with parents of sensitive kids throughout the beginning of my career, at first by working with children with significant behavior issues, significant mental health issues, teenagers who are engaging in chronic suicide, self-harm behaviors. And I noticed that these kids were similar to my own sister. So there's a big story behind how I became a specialist in this avenue. However, one thing that I noticed in my early career and my training was that there were some children who were born more sensitive than others, and parents were missing an effective way to parent them. And through the course of my training, being trained in addressing this chronic suicidality, self-harm for adolescents and older, what I noticed is that there was an opportunity for parents to prevent this from happening by addressing the needs of sensitive kids much younger in their childhood. So it's definitely a personal mission of mine to serve this population at this stage of life.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, for the audience that is watching now, they might not know what it is, a highly sensitive child. Mm-hmm. What are the traits? I know sometimes we confuse the trait of a highly sensitive child with a diagnosis or a disorder. And I guess it's not the same, right? Can you give us a light on that?
True. Yes, that's true. So being highly sensitive is a experience somebody has as their temperament, their disposition, how they're born, right? How they see the world, how they experience the world, and also how they relate to the world, right? So there are four parts to this temperament trait. And I want to first cover the fact that there are, depending on the studies, usually all researchers come to the conclusion that there are five temperaments. And one of those five is something that relates to being thoughtful and sensitive and slow to warm up, right? However, the personality trait that was determined in the 1990s by Dr. Elaine Aron really takes a clearer look at this temperament from an understanding that children who experience the world differently with this temperament meet four criteria. So Dr. Elaine Aron named these four criteria to be depth of processing. So they're taking in a lot of information from the world. And then it is a lot for them to process. And so your child might be considered wise beyond their years. You might think of them as intellectually gifted because they notice those small details and they're impacted by that, which leads to the second piece of her acronym DOES. O stands for easily overstimulated. So if you're taking in a lot of information from the world, that's going to impact you. And if you don't have emotion regulation skills, then that means that it's going to be difficult for you to handle all of that information. You'll also be more sensitive to it. So that means that you're going to be more negatively impacted if you don't have those emotion regulation skills as a child. So these are children who have a hard time with large crowds or loud noises, or are more affected by sensations, many obligations at once. They may have a hard time being rushed, feel time pressure differently than other children. And the next piece is that they're emotionally responsive. That's the way that Dr. Aron reports this in her research. And there's been many researchers that have taken her her information beyond her start coining the term. However, emotional responsivity could be characterized as emotionally reactive if a child doesn't have emotion regulation skills. So this is usually what lends parents to start to wonder what's going on with my kid. If they have a highly sensitive child and the child is not resilient in life. So they're not able to tolerate regular everyday experiences or changes. And this might have families and parents start to wonder, you know, what's really going on with my child? As you were mentioning, is there a mental health diagnosis here? Does my child have issues with irritability and anxiety, right? So this emotional responsivity, if you're going to feel big feelings and you don't know how to deal with those feelings, then that means that those feelings are going to create big behaviors, hitting, kicking, screaming, yelling, running away, hiding, withdrawing, shutting down, refusing. And then we have children. So the fourth component is sensitive to subtlety, being able to notice small details and picking up in that. So one of the examples that I give often is that a child is going to notice auntie raise her eyebrows and look at her in a certain way. And this child might be worried about what auntie thinks when she notices that eyebrow raise. That most of us, 80% of us who are not highly sensitive, aren't going to pick up on that very small change in the environment. But highly sensitive people make up 20% of the population. That means one out of every five humans is highly sensitive. Mm-hmm. So it's not a diagnosis, because with such a large population, what's important to understand is that highly sensitive people have a lot of purpose in the world. There's a reason why highly sensitive children exist and why highly sensitive adults exist. Emotionally regulated, highly sensitive children and highly sensitive adults notice small details and are very good at also looking at the big picture. They are very empathetic, and they're able to act on that empathy. They're not overwhelmed by it if they have emotion regulation skills. And so what that means is that they are very good at keeping the collective together and following through on expectations. They are more compelled to want to do things right the first time. Again, if you don't have emotion regulation skills, that plays into perfectionism, right? Mm-hmm. And anxiety and really wanting every single detail to work out the exact right way that you need it to, which might, if you have an extroverted child, show up as my way or the highway.
Right.
So when, you know, I'm bringing attention to the understanding of the trait DOES, those four components, mm-hmm. to understand that might show up differently in every child. Doesn't mean you're going to have an introverted, you know, woe is me wallflower on your hands. You could have an extroverted child who is just expecting everything to work out the way that they want, and they're gregarious, right? So when we think about it from a temperament standpoint, point, it is important to understand that the inner core of how your child experiences the world, it fits those four criteria. How mm-hmm. they display that behavior depends on their skill sets.
Right. And is there is also the uniqueness of each child, right? And the way they're going to express it and the way, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so for parents that are now listening to you and saying, okay, I might have a child that is highly sensitive, right? Because they meet this criteria. There's so many things that you said that, oh my God, I can see my child, like even my own child, the little one, you know, it's highly sensitive for sure. And so can it be misdiagnosed with ADHD, autism? And how can a parent say, okay, should I take it to an expert? Is there a test? You know, how can I know if my child is highly sensitive?
Yes, yes. So one of the key differences between autism and the highly sensitive trait is noticing that that overstimulation is not contingent upon the environment, right? So a child who fits the criteria for autism will be overstimulated in multiple environments and not able to maintain regularly their big, intense emotions, and also struggle with communicating and understanding the fact that communication can actually get their needs met. So there's a difference in how the brain is wired for neurodivergent children, like children who are autistic. Mm-hmm. However, children who are not autistic and are sensitive to their surroundings, they will demonstrate some meltdown type behavior if they don't have emotion regulation skills beyond what's developmentally appropriate, which is age 4. However, we're seeing an inconsistency in the sense that if their inner calm is available to them, then they're able to tolerate hard experiences differently than a child who's autistic, where if the outer world is not helping or overstimulating, every time they'll have the meltdown. So it's more consistent there. It's also much more likely to be consistent in many environments for autistic children compared to children who are highly sensitive. Now, obviously, I'm not going to diagnose your kiddo over the internet here through the radio.
Yeah.
What I will say is that parents can understand their child's disposition by learning about the trait. And so to answer your question, those four components are really what I find to be most effective for parents to understand and digest. Mm-hmm. Compared to only looking at the parent reports that are out there. Now, Dr. Elaine Aron has one that she's been using since the 1990s in her research, and that that one has been utilized regularly mm-hmm. for quite some time now. And there's another one by a researcher out in the UK who is developing and validifying it at this stage. However, it's not published yet for the public. They're working on improving it from the 90s. However, what I find is that it is more impactful to go to Dr. Aron's website and go through the 26-point questionnaire by first looking at the construct of those four pieces, because Dr. Aron says in her research that children who fit 13 or above of those numbers are much more likely to fit the trait. However, it's not a rule out if they don't hit the threshold of half, right, beyond 13, because if some of the answers on some of her report questionnaire mm-hmm. are very intense, right, so say 10 out of 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, and then all four of those components are met, then the child's disposition is likely highly sensitive. It's important to understand that, because Dr. Aron's trait self-report highlights a lot of sensory sensitivities, because this is usually what's easiest for parents to be raising their hand and saying, mm-hmm. my kid struggles with, you know, putting on itchy shirts or mm-hmm. getting their shoes or getting ready for the day. However, their inner experience of how they tolerate or witness the world and process the world is often something that sensitive kids aren't capable of sharing with their parents if they don't have those emotion regulation skills I mentioned earlier. So parents often, you know, especially if I work with them with our specialty, they have a lot of aha moments in noticing how their child fits the trait, with a greater understanding with their child more capable of sharing their emotions and what's really bothering them and what's really affecting them with their world. So I expect parents, you know, at the beginning of your journey of understanding this trait, trying to figure out if your kid fits it, mm-hmm. is to consider it with an open mind and really focus on those four components. Do you see pieces to those four necessary parts of the trait here in your child? And if that's the case, and then we look at their behavior to also wonder if your parenting approach can change and that can help your child thrive more effectively.
Fantastic. And what will be some of the challenges that a parent can have with a highly sensitive child mm-hmm. in comparison maybe with a normal average child?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So highly sensitive children are very susceptible to their environment. It's a scientific concept that discusses vantage sensitivity. So when your child is raised in a home that feels positive to them, they feel validated, understood, and well cared for in their own perception, because they feel heard, then they will respond positively in their behavior. So parents who naturally jive with their child's temperament tend to have a child who is thriving in every aspect of their life. I often describe children who are highly sensitive as falling on one end or the other of the bell curve. Children, when raised in a positive parenting environment, are the top 3% of everything that they do. They are 2 standard deviations from the mean, if we want to go statistically here.
Right.
However, they can swing to the other end, risky, life-threatening behaviors, intense meltdowns that are lasting outside of developmental norms, and hitting, kicking, yelling, all of the major behaviors that I mentioned before, or withdrawing and shutting down. So parents get really stuck, right? What you can try to do is move into your typical traditional parenting, punishing to control behavior, or yelling or scolding, or removing privileges to try to control behavior. And then that tends to escalate things. Either the child shuts down or they explode more. So then a parent will swing to the other end of that. Okay, maybe you can't handle this, so let's just spend a lot of time trying to help you with your big feelings. And then they end up walking on eggshells, trying to do what I call bubble wrapping, like setting the kid up in packaging and treating them like they're fragile. And so we see this swing where it's either one parent on one end, the other parent on the other end, or they're swinging and overcompensating for each other in 2-parent household. And that's typically the dynamic that we see that creates the meltdown cycle that, you know, for our specialty, we help parents in when you have sensitive kids who are struggling a lot.
Can you tell us a little bit more about these meltdown cycles? How do they occur?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So we want to look at what's developmentally appropriate. So for all children, whether your child is highly sensitive or not, we would expect meltdown behavior to be completely grown out of by the time the child is 4. So by the time the kid is 5, we see 0 meltdowns. Now, I want to create a caveat there that if you have a no good, very bad, awful day once in a blue moon and you lose your mind, you're going to be still a human being who is skillful, right? Mm-hmm. However, if a child is having meltdowns multiple times a week, multiple times a day, even daily, especially beyond the age of 4, then that means that the family is in strife. Right? Mm-hmm. There's something going on in the parenting dynamic as well as in the parent-child relationship that is creating this cycle. And I always mention that this is the meltdown cycle is a family dynamic problem. It is not a child problem, right? So the child learns through the parents. So what that means is that as a parent, you need to notice that you're overwhelmed by this. That's natural. It is to be expected. You're likely frustrated and worried and sad and feeling helpless or powerless even and disempowered if your strategy to help your child and to connect to your child isn't working. And so our specialty here at MTC is helping parents notice that this is a family dynamic issue where we have a parent spinning in their own mind of what do I do next and how do I keep this together? And my own reactions calm. And then a child who's learning that skill and they're spinning here too. So we have at least 2 spinning cycles going on in the household. And, you know, if you've ever played with tops as a kid, they spin. And if they hit each other, then they go in opposite directions, right? Which means that the family feels awry or non-collaborative. Sometimes it can feel like you're butting heads or you're just distant, emotionally distant from each other. And that feels distressing for the family. And this is a family who's can this can happen in family with trauma history or not, but the dynamic in the home generally feels very, very hard.
Right. So what it is your approach when you're coaching with these kind of families? I mean, I see as well that it's not only with highly sensitive, right? This could apply to every family, right? If you're going to punish, if you're going to, you know, treat your kid like, you know, you can't, you have to control them and they have no space to feel safe. At the end of the day, they're going to explode, right? Because it is, it's a problem of, we get stuck in the behavior, right? Instead of going underneath and seeing what's. So that was my question about, like, how do you work with parents to, I guess, to have some tools to manage these situations and, and make them more better for themselves and better for the kid, right? It's like having the kids have all the emotions and none of the skills, you know. Okay. So how can we make that progress? Yeah.
So we take a mindful approach where we teach parents how to manage their own emotions and decrease their own emotional intensity, for sure. And part of that is in learning how to assess their child effectively. So in raising your child, you need to understand why they're behaving a certain way and what's really driving that behavior. That knowledge is power, but information isn't transformation. You have to change yourself and also simultaneously work to change your child. And so we first focus on the parent feeling much more capable and understanding what's contributing to the problem, what they can do to stop the problem from continuing it from a preventative standpoint, and move out of reactivity. Usually where we see parents get stuck in this meltdown cycle is if they're doing what I call crisis of the week coaching, keeping their child focused on the behavior that they're demonstrating today and teaching them a skill to prevent that behavior into tomorrow. And that feels preventative because you're trying to make tomorrow not yesterday. However, when we zoom out, we realize we're following the child's behavior to tell us what we need to fix, right? So it's actually still reactive. So we teach a process where parents are more effectively principled in managing their child's behavior. We teach them how to triage big intense behaviors and notice what behaviors are actually symptoms of the cycle operating together. And those behaviors don't need to be targeted, which is very relieving to parents. As a play therapist, I teach the science of play to parents. They can be trained just like I was trained. I was not naturally playful as a young adult and in my early life. And I learned this. If I can do it, you can do it too. As the oldest and a high performer, I had to retrain my brain to focus on play because given my upbringing, you know, regular traditional 80s parenting, punishment
absolutely
was the way.
I'm there. Yeah.
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 And punishment, removal of privileges, doing exactly what I say, no matter what, was the way that I was raised, as most parents are raising their children or trying not to raise their children in that dynamic these days. And because of their history. And what that does is it teaches children to keep it together, even if they're boiling inside. Yeah. And highly sensitive children are the alarm bells of society. They're telling us, hey, this isn't working for a lot of us. And I'm here on this earth to scream at you about it. And they might scream verbally or scream internally, right? And take it out on themselves. But what's going on in that dynamic is we're teaching external motivation. I am the external source of your control, as I am your controller as a parent. Yeah. This is very draining as a parent because you end up having to use force, intense mentality, or over control. And we need children to be internally motivated to change and internally motivated to do well. So we can't be using sticker charts or reward plans or removal of privileges that are unnatural to basically keep a leash on your kid and drag them along through life. So we teach parents how to understand where their child's internal motivation is coming from, what helps them feel better about themselves, raise their confidence, and they naturally creatively solve their problems as a result. Now, obviously, for our clientele, the children are demonstrating really big, intense behaviors. So we also teach parents how to strategically manage those behaviors and decrease them for sure.
And for how long? I mean, this is a work's life, right? Like, this is for life that we have to, like, keep looking at ourselves and, you know, being capable to manage first what's going on for us, and then to be, you know, make a safe space for our kids. But for how long? Like, I think you have some courses, or one course at least that I know about that is 8 weeks. Am I correct?
Yes.
Right. So with our
Go ahead.
So with 8 weeks, what a parent can learn, what we'll learn, and how can come out of those 8 weeks.
Yes. So our work is very intensive, and we invite and apply only, it's application only for clients who want to work with us. However, that's because we have very good results, because we make sure that everybody who comes to work with us is going to get the result that we provide. We have a 98% success rate, with the understanding that everybody who does the work gets the result of eliminating the daily meltdown cycle in their home. And they know why and how they did that, so that they can repeat it. So our process in 8 weeks is very intensive, where we're working directly with the parents, and we're teaching them how to be the therapeutic change agent for the children, because that's how highly sensitive kids learn. They learn by first managing the external environment so that they feel ready for change, and then are more capable of holding themselves accountable, and then they take off. Whereas a non-highly sensitive child, you can work directly with that non-highly sensitive child, teach them skills, and they can be resilient in any environment. Highly sensitive children need to feel secure in their parent-child relationship and in their home, and then they can be resilient in any environment. So we have to look at the temperament to understand how and who needs to be the change agent for the kiddos. So yes, we work directly with parents for 8 straight weeks in an intensive manner, and then we have continuity for there in terms of our process, because there are lifestyle changes that we have our clients make, and we want our clients to be able to maintain that, and we support them in that.
And is it a one-on-one or is it groups?
Group, because, oh my goodness, this problem is so isolating. You know, one out of every five, right? That means you might have multiple children and only one child who's highly sensitive. Or you might have one child in your home and nobody in your environment is noticing that their kid's highly sensitive, or their perspective is different on how children learn and what priorities are in the home for emotion management and emotion intelligence. So the group community of parents who are solving problems, who are high performers, and who are really efficacious in doing that, really motivates people to want to see that same result in their own homes. And that allows our process to work much more effectively. Yeah. Now, obviously, we do one-on-one support in multiple avenues, including in the group calls. However, our work is a hybrid model, because it is so, so rewarding for families to no longer feel alone in this dynamic. And we work with families around the world, so it really helps parents stop believing that this can't happen for them.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. Getting the power of the community, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. Fantastic. Yes. You don't do it yet in Spanish, though.
We have a Spanish-speaking performance coach that would work with our team. However, our course material is in English at this time.
Okay. Time.
And I speak, I speak a tiny bit of Spanish. It's not appropriate for me to coach in Spanish. Yeah. So
there's always time.
Obviously, we're doing this interview and you're in Spain. And so for families who have, who can be mediumly fluent in English and perhaps even one parent who is fluent in English and one parent is not, we can support through written and hybrid model in that respect. However, we would need at least one person to be able to understand English.
Right.
To work with us.
Fantastic. Yes. I'm sure they're taking note.
It's a small team, so yeah.
Fantastic.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there are some concrete maybe strategies or something that you can talk about with parents, that any takeaway that, you know, a parent that is listening to us now is maybe first annoying about a highly sensitive child, or maybe they knew about it before, but they're like, I have nothing. I have no tools. I don't know how to approach it. Can you tell us something, like 2-3 things that they can straight away use for their child?
The first piece is noticing that you can be the therapeutic change agent for your child. Being able to raise your confidence in yourself and feel empowered is critically important in solving this problem for your family. If you're stuck in a meltdown cycle where it's happening on a daily or multiple times a day basis, or even multiple times a week, it is time to engage with a professional. So what I want to do is speak to parents of all highly sensitive kids that your capacity to be confident in raising your child is critical. Your child will feed off of that energy if you are uncertain or if you're letting them lead the show in an emotional manner. So I'm sure all of the mindfulness skills that you teach in your institute will be applicable here for parents to become emotionally aware and choose not to add to the emotional intensity in the moment and work hard at that, right? So that's definitely number one. Number two would be that play is the language of children. It is much more efficient to be playful with your child to help them follow through. And in our process, we teach play as science rather than play as distraction. So I'm not just talking about, you know, trying to, you know, be a clown for your kiddo. I'm talking about really being able to
talk
relate.
About a play. You know, play is such a huge thing, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Stand a little bit onto play.
So children learn through play. Play is their language. Toys are their words. So what that means is that, you know, as adults, we need to learn to speak that language. And if it's uncomfortable for us, that's where we start. Getting silly, getting playful, being able to tolerate that discomfort and choosing not to be in charge of your child's play and being able to relate to your child by noticing that you don't need to be a performer in your child's play. I mean, that's just so crucial for kiddos today and parents and children now. At this time, we're very busy, right? So it can feel like when you play with your kid, you have to eliminate boredom for your child. Your child wants you to be there with them while they're playing. And so it actually turns the tables on how much pressure it is for a parent to be with a child who's playing. So that would be obviously impacting the environment more subtly in a positive manner. Definitely necessary to be able to prioritize that with children.
Beautiful. Yeah. And it's so much easier, I find it with my own kids. I don't know. You have two kids?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, me too. So I find it so much easier when you know, even when you get tired, it's like, you know, for me, the evenings are like really the worst time, right? Like you've been working all day. It's like the patience like goes really low and they're like, you know, I get soup again. No, you know, whatever. And when I can like really like shift your mode of like, you know, like I'm so tired. And you can go like into play mode and make fun of it. And, you know, they follow it so much easier, right? Mm-hmm. Like they get into, like you were saying, into another language that they understand better. And they like that. And it's like a question of connection with you. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, being away and getting, you know, shocked. It's completely the opposite. It's like connection, no? Connection first. Yeah. So yeah, I love the theme of play. Can give right. We can speak about it like for another whole session.
Yes. I mean, given my specialty, right? There's a post grad certification
Absolutely.
On it, so there's plenty to talk about. But but yes, in regular everyday parenting, and again, it just goes back to like this is trainable, right? It might not feel natural. I know when I was babysitting at age 12, I was sitting on the couch and being like, "You guys go do that." Because I was so parentified and, you know, being in charge and intellectualized, and reading was my play at that point because I just needed to focus on my logical brain, had no emotional awareness at that young age. So I have very strong memories as a child in not playing, right? To the point where I was restricting my own play, saving fun crayons and colored pencils for a special occasion even. So restricting my own play was a self-induced reaction to the parenting dynamic. Then, you know, I love my parents and it's just the way we were raised in the 80s. And it was a mismatch to my personality. Now, I'm not highly sensitive, but I am definitely more type A and driven. Mm-hmm. So I just ran with my intellect. And so with that history and then getting my first job out of grad school, working with very young children, it's when back in 2009 when the bubble burst, I had to take the first job that didn't require me to travel all over Timbuktu as a, you know, a driving therapist. And it was with young kids. So I had to learn really quickly in what I believe is a fate focused opportunity. I don't believe in coincidences. However, it was a big skill set. And like I said, it wasn't natural to me at all for many, many years. My sister, who's highly sensitive, she loves kids, and I love kids now too, right? But it was just not a thing that it was easy for me to pick up. Now, as a parent, it's automatic. It's automatic now. So we're playful, we're silly, we're dancing, we have dance parties on a daily basis. Like, it's just a fun dynamic to engage in. And at this stage, it's rote memory. So any skill set we can learn. The brain is very plastic in that mentality.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's very hopeful too, right?
Yes,
like
exactly.
I'm not stuck. Yeah, right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not stuck. We can get out of fixed mode and go into a growth mindset, and we can just, you know, change. And that it's that's the hope for the future human being, right?
Right.
We can
exactly.
change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to run down the field in football and hit the goal. I won't be good at that. But I can absolutely
me neither.
Follow the kids now.
Yeah.
I'm not very fast. So we all have our shortcomings for sure. But I also didn't train that hard when I was playing as a kid.
Yeah.
It wasn't my preference.
Totally.
And as parents, it's our preference. It's our preference to feel connected, right? Which means we use that internal drive to really build the new skills. And it's absolutely possible for everybody.
Yeah.
I think it is important for us to cover that if parents are engaging in trying to be mindful and playful and teach emotional intelligence, and yet are still feeling stuck, especially if they're using gentle parenting, just really exuding that hope that the typical traditional gentle parenting ways are still keeping parents stuck in this dynamic of the meltdown cycle. And that's through no fault of your own. It's just that the structure needs to move into more strategic support. So this is what my team does. When we notice that you can be building a healthy attachment with your child, you can be kind and caring and demonstrate emotional intelligence by regulating and validating emotions alongside your kid. You might need more specific tools to help your child stop the meltdown cycle and change the dynamic in your whole household. However, you don't have to move into punishment or the way that you were raised if that was true strict parenting in that respect and overt control of the child's behavior. And so if your gut tells you that this is the right way, it is, you might need to get more help for strategy for sure. However, you don't have to ride the wave of the emotional intensity and have those meltdowns last for hours only to have conversations about what the child could be doing differently next time. That's what gentle parenting will teach parents. And it's what a lot of parent coaches who are talking about helping parents of sensitive kids eliminate those meltdowns. However, it's a very long road with that mentality and it's exhausting. And it just lends people to think, well, maybe my method isn't going to work for us. And I really want to exude that hope. Focusing on emotional intelligence in the home is absolutely something that you can do, and you can teach your child through that positive relationship.
Yeah, and it's trainable. Yeah, yeah. And actually, you know, where you were saying the way we were parented, like more harsh and, you know, controlled, and it doesn't feel good to the parent either.
No.
It does not feel good to the parent. It might be coming out through you because that's what you experienced when you were, you know, a child, and it's like, but it's what you learn, right? Your default mode, it might be to punish, you know, in any sense, but it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. There is a disconnect, you know, and I think that it's something that down the road is gonna, you know, in the teens years, maybe, you know, it's gonna provoke a completely disconnection from you, you know, because you cannot control a teenage, you know, teenagers. So yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
So, you know, going back to my specialty and why I do what I do, right? Engaging with highly sensitive teenagers who were engaging in self-harmful behavior, hurting themselves, and then also engaging in chronic suicidality in and out of the hospital, right? I have clinical experience working with kids and keeping them out of the hospital through an evidence-based treatment. And it's also true that I worked in a residential treatment center. So this is a locked door facility, 6 months or more, where the teenager's behavior was so out of control and unsafe that they could not be cared for in their own home. And some of these teenagers had trauma histories, right? But some of them just had mismatched parenting. And that narrow focus of noticing that this is where it can go, as obviously that's a worst case scenario. As parents, we have the privilege to always focus on our legacy and address and learn more and do better than our parents, because our parents knew what they knew and they were doing the best they can.
Absolutely.
And we know more and can do the best that we can, right?
Yeah.
And the science and my clinical experience over almost 15 years now just demonstrates that there is a subset, a pocket of these kids who end up out of the home because of their unsafe behavior as a result of a simple mismatch in parenting, years and years and years of chronic invalidation. And that's been researched since the 1960s, actually. That research started with Marcia Linehan. The personality trait actually was identified first in clinical writings in the 1920s by Carl Jung. He was focusing on this this temperament trait at that point, and he's one of the grandfathers of psychology. Mm-hmm. So it's been around.
We just didn't have it in our radar the way that
exactly.
we do now. And
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And neuroscience is backing up all of this as well, right?
That's correct. Yep. We use evidence-based approaches, research-backed approaches for our work. And in our dynamic, it's coaching, not therapy. So working directly with the parents and teaching you what to do in your own home, because I'm not raising your kid, you are, right? So you need to feel empowered to do that.
Yeah. And you need the knowledge as well, like how the brain works, right? And what happens when you are reactive.
Yes.
And what happens when your child is reactive, what's happening in your brain is not the child can't decide for himself, I'm going to, you know, be your torment today because I want to, you know, right? Because I want to like have something.
Exactly.
It doesn't work like that, right? And and I think sometimes neuroscience, it's very apart from society itself, from parents. Mm-hmm. And we do need that information as well.
Mm-hmm.
We need to know what's going on, what's our nervous system and how it works, because that supports when a bad moment of reactivity comes, that's supporting, oh no, that's what's happening. That's what's happening. Can you talk a little bit about this? Because I think it's
Let's go. Okay, so I've got the brain here.
Fantastic. Okay. We love
this
brains.
This part of the brain.
Yeah.
This part of the brain is the frontal lobe. It's right here in the forehead, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the part of the brain that's developed by the time the child hits 25. Notice how I said child and 25, right?
Right.
How many of us listening in know people who are 25 and still behaving like children, right?
Yeah. So, and more.
Myself included. When I was 25, I was not mature, right? So this part of the brain is what controls the forward thinking before acting. And so if this part of the brain is not fully developed until age 25, what that means is that when we tell a child that they should know better and that they're supposed to control their behavior and we're supposed to talk to them about what they should be doing better next time after their meltdown, we are asking children to have a part of their brain that isn't actually developed yet. Now, the actual brain is there, but the wires inside the brain are not thorough, they're not thick, they're not connected, and they're firing very ineffectively, right? And so it's inconsistent at best, non-existent at worst. And so what happens is we have to look at how emotions control the brain's capacity to grow, right? Because if we're parenting in a way where we're telling our children to do better and to listen to me and to know what I'm going to do to you, take away a privilege or time out or whatever, and remember that when you're at the heat of a moment, right? you're about to explode or hit or cry or whatever, then we're asking them to have a thoroughly developed frontal lobe, and we're also making them feel bad, right? We're creating an emotional disconnect in the relationship. You don't understand me. How do you expect me to know how to do this when I can't? I don't feel capable, right? So it actually decreases self-esteem. And when we have shame, and a child who's highly sensitive is more prone to experiencing shame because they want the collective community to feel better and to work well, as I mentioned before, it's part of the trait. They're more empathetic. And if they can act on that empathy, we see that in compassion,
yeah.
right? We see that in their emotional intelligence. However, if they're stuck and frozen, they are not acting on empathy when they're overwhelmed. So we see counterproductive behavior. You can't use that as evidence to say your kid isn't empathetic. Mm-hmm. What happens is that shame takes over, and shame keeps you stuck, and shame tells you, who do you think you are? And you don't deserve this. And so when we have a child who is thinking small in their mind, and they are thinking that they're a bad kid, and judging themselves, they start to say things like, I hate myself, or I hate you, and all yeah. that. And they feel incapable. And as a result, we're using parenting strategies that are keeping our child from feeling capable while telling them that they're capable. This is a very maddening experience when we look at it like that.
It is. It is. Like, oh my God.
But it's also the internal experience for the child is, there must be something wrong with me. And when you perpetuate that over time, this is what happens when we get to those extreme behaviors in adolescence.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, 9, 10, 11, we see it.
Yeah, you can think, I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. Yeah. And you can be all your life, because your circuits, they're also developing while you're getting mm-hmm. that information, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just like one or not. It's developing while you're parenting. That's why also it's so important.
Yeah, we have to be using neuroscience to apply what we're teaching our children, and how we teach our children, and how they learn. Because the old way only was focused on a ineffective assumption of the brain. We were comparing people to dogs. I give you a treat, you do what I say, right? Mm-hmm. Very simplistic. Mm-hmm. That 1960s Pavlovian approach is debunked in terms of how children learn and how children motivate. However, because we have so much history, you know, 20 some odd years for ourselves of being, you know, interacting with parents who did that, we have a lot of opinions as to how it created opportunity for us. And I invite you to wonder, did you thrive or survive in spite of that way of parenting, right? Rather than because of that way of parenting. So obviously getting curious about that and practicing forgiveness and gratitude for your opportunities is super critical, and mindfulness for that. And right now, you get to decide to follow what we know about the brain and what keeps the brain small, less creative, less effective, less collaborative. And what we know is that fear will continue to make us ineffective in our lives. And highly sensitive children are more susceptible to that. They're less resilient if they're raised in that manner. So what that means is that we shouldn't be using punishment for any child, right? Yeah. I'm not talking about natural consequences. Natural consequences is, you know, you throw the TV, the TV's broken.
Broken.
Natural,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. you know, if you're taking away TV because the kid is yelling at you about snacks, like, robot does not compute. Like, I don't get that, right? Yeah. The child is obviously confused, and so are you. You're just looking for leverage. Mm. And so I invite you to notice that there's a different way to have leverage. Your leverage is through your connection. Your child naturally wants to be connected to you. And in fact, it's self-destructive to behave in a way that is not connected to you, which means since no child was put on this earth to be miserable, your child is miserable if they're acting in counterproductive ways towards their relationship. So with that assumption and that knowledge, we can then decide to change the way that we parent. It's also important. I want to just like put a little piece here on this, Miriam, related to how the brain works and how some less punitive manners of parenting still miss the mark. Timeouts. I'm going to talk about that. Okay. Because there's so much out in the world very popular, written by psychologists, still using timeouts. And go over here and think about what you did for young children is actually counterproductive for the brain. Children don't actually have inner conversations with themselves until starting around age 6. And yet we use timeouts for like 2-year-olds. I mean, I never did, but yeah. We're told to, right?
You know, I've never heard, you know, a child that is like, okay, time out. And so they go to their room and they're like Googling, okay, what is an effective way for me to cope with what I'm feeling right now?
Right. In their mind, what are they doing? They're playing, they're, you know, distracting themselves. They're crying, they're losing it. They're getting rageful because they're disconnected from you. All of that. And so did you, you know, what is it that you're supposed to do? What were you thinking about? Right.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Your child is logical and they're smart, but they're not telling them, they're not having inner conversations. It's not how their brain works at that age. And so, if we could get those books discontinued because they were debunked, I would love to do that. I don't know how to make that happen around the world. but I know that there's popular books from the 90s that are still in circulation and they're still making money off of it. And it's so hard. You know, I speak to parents every day and parents who want to work with us. And they say, you know, I've tried, you know, counting to 3 and timeouts and all of that because of these popular methods. Mm-hmm. Popular doesn't mean effective.
Absolutely.
It just means that a lot of people
are ineffective. Actually, they don't work. Yeah.
And shaming and keeps the child feeling super confused, and which disrupts the relationship for sure.
Yeah. And actually also they learn by absorption, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that you can cope with your own emotions and with and provide an space where they can feel the emotion, because the emotion is there, you know, and providing a safe space where they can feel it. And then their identity is not their behavior.
That's right.
Which is so, and now it's like behavior and identity plan. This is one thing. And that's what we're looking at. And we don't see the child in their goodness, in their love, in their capability. You've lost that. Mm-hmm. You've lost that. When you're treating
your perception of your kid.
Exactly. And so they're lost as well.
That's right.
Because of the co-regulation, right? They don't have it. Yeah, it's missing. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Megan, amazing. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, it's been wonderful. And I love talking about this stuff. So obviously, I love my job, so I'm happy to share and speak more about it.
Yeah, we'd love to have you here anytime. This is your home. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can do a workshop in the future. For that, we need our audience to, to say, yes, I want more of this. Hopefully that happens, and it's so important. And let us know, where can we find you? How can we follow you and know everything that you are posting, writing, anything?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So we're on every major platform. We have a YouTube channel, Megan Thompson Coaching. We have a Facebook group and a podcast with the same name, Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. Those are in English. YouTube, you can probably get it pretty easily in your language. And in Spanish. And then we're on Instagram. And then you can, for parents who are stuck in the meltdown cycle, you can register for my free masterclass. Go to meganthompsoncoaching.com/5steps. And I'm sure we'll put the link in the show notes here for you to experience.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you. Yes, likewise. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. We release a brand new episode every week, so be sure to click subscribe. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in hearing more about how to eliminate the meltdown cycle, I invite you to check out our free masterclass, where we cover the 5 steps our clients use to eliminate the daily meltdowns. You can register for the next training at meganthompsoncoaching.com/5steps. That's the number 5, STEPS. meganthompsoncoaching.com/5steps. Have a great day.